This is The Think Tank with Dr. Mike O'Neill, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Well, the biggest issue of the year last year was clearly Save Our Schools, Red for Ed, the teacher revolt. That was clearly the story of the year for 2018. It's 2019. What is happening? There is action at the legislature, some of which appears to be an attempt to, well, we'll talk about what it's an attempt to do. With our guest, Lily Altavina is the Arizona Republic Education Reporter, Christine Marsh, 2016 Arizona Teacher of the Year, and a near-miss Arizona Senate candidate. It was a few hundred. What was it?
267.
You will remember that number to the day.
Yes, I will.
And Beth Lewis. She was chair of Save Our Schools Arizona, which successfully put the initiative on the referendum on the ballot to countervan what the legislature had done in expanding vouchers. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I wanted to start with you because you're calling in for the record. You're teaching today, and you get an hour a day off, and this is it.
Yep, just a nice little lunch
prep time. Well, hopefully you'll find it's well spent. Now, you had some off topic, but you had a rather interesting invitation. I want to hear about it. What's it like to be invited to the State of the Union? And tell us something we don't know.
It was really fascinating. I knew I would be going to the speech, but it was a huge surprise that I got to attend the reception ahead of the State of the Union in the Speaker's quarters. So I was actually in Speaker Pelosi's quarters, getting to meet all of the representatives. A lot of those ladies that you saw in white garb got some face time with them, and it was just amazing because I was introduced as a teacher from Arizona, and everybody, you know, their faces just lit up, and it was such a genuine, like, I think people just have such admiration for teachers, and then the story had made its way around the country, you know, that teachers did what we did last year. So it was really exciting to be there and to represent Arizona teachers.
I think there's a lot of warmth towards teachers, but I think there's also some respect for what you were part of accomplishing in the state of Arizona as well.
Yeah.
Which would have been appreciated by people in the political business who would have, who would have killed to get a crowd with 40,000 people.
Yeah. It was interesting. My host, Congressman Gallego, kind of introduced me and talked about Red for Ed. And, you know, I think there was some familiarity there, but when he talked about referring universal voucher expansion and defeating it, like, the lights really went on because I think that's such a federal issue, and they're so in the, you know, they see Betsy DeVos and they're dealing with that across the country. And so that seemed to really kind of be a aha moment where people kind of, their eyes went wide, like, you did what? Just a bunch of moms and teachers. And that was really cool too.
As indeed it should be. So I wanted to start with you and move substantively. What's your take on what's happening at the legislature this year?
I think we're all pretty disappointed. That sums it up. I mean, Arizona voters voted 2-1 against vouchers and sent a direct mandate to our legislators that we want to see our public schools funded, and we don't want to waste any more time on private school voucher schemes. And yet, here we are again. There are bills that are moving through the legislature that would expand vouchers, and, you know, it's just kind of, it's rinse, repeat over and over, even though the voters were very, very clear. And, you know, there's a lot of debate over the semantics of, is this an expansion? And then the JLBC comes out with a report saying this absolutely is an expansion and it will cost.
And the JLBC is Joint Legislative Budget Committee. That's insider talk. Joint Legislative Budget Committee. It is an arm of the legislature that is supposed to be independent in making judgments.
Exactly. Yes. And well respected by both parties. So, you know, I think we're disappointed. We had hoped with all of the talk of bipartisanship at the beginning of session from the governor and, you know, all of the leaders down there that we would see a funding package and, you know, of some meat and something that everybody could kind of embrace. And we're just not seeing that. The one funding package that's been proposed everybody's been pretty neutral on, and we're not seeing support really from either party. So we just don't see that bipartisan spirit that was promised, and we don't see our public schools getting funded. The governor, in his favor, I will say the governor is the only one who's doing anything.
And what you think there's a rift between the governor and the legislature on this?
It seems like there are a lot of rifts down at the legislature right now. Mm-hmm. Nobody's voting like by party, and it's just there seem to be a lot of different factions. But I mean, we've even seen Governor Ducey veto a measure that, you know, eliminated money going to our general fund. So he's made some bold moves along with his budget.
Sense is, and I want you to correct me because it's a global sense, you're going to get the 5% raise promised because that would be too conspicuous to not do. But that feels like that's about it. Am I about right in that regard?
Yeah, I think the writing is definitely on the wall. I mean, there's a SCR right now, which is a legislative referral. So that would go to the voters in 2020 for a penny sales tax, which is just an increase of by 4/10. So that would get, you know, a couple hundred.
Because it's 0.6%
school.
Right now. So it's not a new 1 cent. It's a new
right.
0.4 cents in addition, new 0.4 cents in addition to extending the 0.6 current.
Right. And despite, you know, some groups heavy lifting, it just seems like, you know, Dems are kind of opposing for the standard reasons of a sales tax being regressive and it's not enough money. And Republicans are, many of them are against any sort of sales tax increase or any tax increase at all. And so we're just kind of, we're left holding the pail once again, the pail with a bunch of holes in it because of vouchers. So, which they're trying to expand.
You sound disappointed.
Well, I can be a bit Pollyanna sometimes, and I was optimistic at the beginning of session, and I think there's still some hope. There's definitely a lot of work going on down there to make sure that those voucher expansions are killed, and Save Our Schools is definitely leading the charge there, and I think we're trying to work intelligently with the groups that are really in power, and we have some, you know, some good meetings set up with the players that are in charge of all of this. So we're working with ADE and with Senator Allen. So, I mean, there is some hope, but it's going to take a lot for us to, you know, ever get this bill to any point where it's not an expansion. And I just don't see how.
Well, let me ask you this, because the operating assumption there at the onset is a party line vote. The Republicans have a majority in both houses. So the question is, do you have any sense of a Republican defection on the voucher bill? And if so, whom?
Definitely. We have. I don't think it would be politically savvy of me right now to say the particular people, but I think people who follow politics kind of understand that there are 4 or 5 Republicans down there who do support public schools. And I mean, obviously, Representative Udall is a public school teacher, and we've seen a few others who have definitely stuck their necks out recently and said that they would not support any sort of expansion.
Well, and in the House, you only need one defection.
Right.
So.
Yep.
Why so disappointed then? That sounds. Well.
Well, it still gets us to the status quo, right?
It gets you to the status quo. It doesn't get you anything new.
Right. Well, and it just keeps another bad thing from happening, which, great. But, you know, I think Christine actually had a really great post about this last week where we're all spending hundreds of hours fighting bad things once again. And, I mean, the way I kind of look at it at this point is, look, 42% of our general fund goes to K-12 education. It should be about 50%, but we don't need to split hairs. Half of the job of the legislature is to fund our K-12 schools and to enact good, responsible policy around those funds. It should not be a nuisance to fund our schools. It shouldn't be something where it's like, oh, well, we shouldn't have to deal with that. Like, absolutely, that's their job. The legislature, that's half of their job is to adequately fund our schools. And well, the conversations aren't even happening.
Well, thank you, Beth. If you can stick around, it'd be appreciated. If you have to go back to Teats, we understand. We'll be back in the moment. We're going to bring Christine Marsh and Lily Altavina into the discussion when we return in just a moment in the Think Tank.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back discussing Red for Ed in Arizona. We've been talking to Beth Lewis of Save Our Schools. Christine Marsh, you were interesting looking the development in the legislature. One of the most conspicuous developments is in the area of charter regulation. And I thought you might have some particularly interesting thoughts on that, given that the main discussion in the legislature is a proposal by the woman who beat you by a couple of hundred votes. Otherwise, you'd be I gather you'd propose something different.
Yeah, I would propose something different. I would propose something a little bit more substantial and significant. Any time you get to have two family members on a three-person board, which is under the current bill, I have a problem with that.
Right now they're not even restricted to that.
Correct. But even that, still allowing the majority to happen. I would have liked to have seen something stronger. I can't say that I'm at all surprised, though. I'm not surprised by anything that's gone on down there this session, because until there's some kind of a shift in the balance of power, this is the way it's going to be. And so I'm not going to lie and say I'm, you know, happy. Certainly I'm disappointed, but not at all surprised.
What is the feeling you get when you talk to other teachers with whom you associate? I realize in talking to you and Beth, I'm talking to activists who are particularly engaged in this matter. Now, last year, there were a whole lot more actively engaged. What's the level of at which teachers are following things down there? And what's the feeling in the classrooms?
I think that really depends even on a particular school, let alone a district, and let alone the individuals in that district. Certainly, there are a lot of teachers who are following things pretty closely. I think the vast majority, though, are following things rather loosely. They know what they are experiencing, and they know how tough it is to stay in this profession. But there aren't probably a whole lot of teachers who could rattle off bill numbers or the details of particular bills. But they are recognizing that things are not moving in the direction that we need in order to retain teachers or attract them in the first place.
So the 20% net over 3 years raise is not changed the status quo a lot, is the feeling I'm getting.
It has not changed at all.
The underlying issues.
Correct. No, to be fair, that was good. It's great that, you know, almost everybody got raises. But no, it is not affecting the retention, because the level of pay is so low that that amount doesn't make it up. And, I think that as a state, we need to be really shifting the focus to the effect that this is having on students. And that's, the students being stuck in really big class sizes that's not okay.
Lily, you're down there as a reporter in the legislature following these issues. What's your take on what you see?
Well, so, education funding is still the hot topic. And I think what I've seen, from teacher advocates and leaders is that there's just not enough conversation about education funding. So, really the only bills in the hopper that might make some movement in education funding is Sylvia Allen's proposal, for the penny sales tax, as Beth had talked about before. That would raise about an additional $400 million to the classroom. Advocates say they need about $1 billion to restore recession-era cuts. And I've looked at sort of the JLBC numbers, and that kind of matches up. The governor is sticking with his 20 by 2020 plan. There's not a huge amount of—
That would
of,
be very tough for him to renege on, wouldn't it?
I mean,
that
would
was a
be
very,
very
public,
tough.
Very specific commitment. My guess is that happens no matter what.
Yeah, it would be quite extraordinary circumstances. And, you know, with still conversation about a budget surplus this year, I don't think he'll have to go back on that
and
promise.
I think that's why he wants the extra money in the rainy day fund. That's why he wanted the business about the conformity with federal taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Would have raised a couple of hundred million if you didn't jigger with the rates, because that just gives him, doesn't get him there, but gives him a little bit more to put in the piggy bank, so that even if we get hit with a financial downturn, there's still enough to come through on the 20 by 20, probably nothing other than that, but it gets him over the hump.
Right. But then what we see from education leaders is that money is just not enough. The 20 by 20, yes, will add to teachers' raises. It will add a little bit to district, you know, classroom funding, what's called district additional assistance and charter additional assistance. But it's still not going to bring teacher raises up, you know, to the national median. And it's just not going to get advocates to where they want to be and teachers to where they want to be. And then on the flip side, teachers are saying that they're seeing, you know, especially AEA, the Arizona Education Association, their leaders are seeing, you know, bills that they see as retaliation. And that's upset a few teachers.
We will pick up on that point. Retaliatory bills. When we return after the break in the Think Tank.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back discussing education, Red for Ed, and legislative action. Just before the our guest, by the way, Beth Lewis, Save Our Schools, Christine Marsh, teacher, former teacher of the year, and near miss Arizona senatorial candidate, and Lily Altavino, who I'm going to go to first. She's a Arizona Republic education reporter. And you use the phrase retaliatory legislation. I've seen several things discussed. What's the status of that? What's involved in those bills?
Right. So educators, especially this year, you know, even as early as December, have been fired up about what they say are retaliatory bills. The first one was from Representative Mark Fincham. That bill really hasn't gone anywhere. And that would have punished teachers for espousing political ideology, talking politics in the classroom, and then
I want to know how you teach civic without talking politics.
Right. And so there would be, you know, there would be exemptions for what is classroom. But I think teachers said it's hard because it's hard to not blur the lines there.
It's intimidating because it's inherently vague.
Right. And so Representative Kelly Townsend, I think it was, last Monday, there was a marathon like until 10 p.m. Education Committee hearing in the House where, you know, teachers were debating her bill, which would have banned ideological beliefs. So, you know, teachers wouldn't be able to espouse political or religious beliefs in the classroom. And again, I think from education leaders like the AEA have said that they felt those were retaliatory bills.
Well, I look at that. And I know, Christina, you have a thought on that. But to me, it's like it's mostly intimidation. We know there's a line where you're proselytizing and nobody wants that. But how you can talk about almost anything that's a current issue or even a past issue without having some opinion on it seems to me to be inherently gray.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in on that. It wasn't the matter of the bill that I think teachers considered retaliatory, or even I'd actually go so far as it's a witch hunt. It's actually the fact that those laws already exist. So to dig them back up, to increase the penalty for the laws that already exist, just seemed like such an incredible waste of time when they really have bigger things that they should be focusing on, like funding our schools and, you know, putting caps on STOs and things like that. And so that, I think teachers had, me included, had some real issues with.
Beth, your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree, Christine. I think it's probably as much as Townsend, who introduced the bills, one of the bills that's going, it does probably want to retaliate in some sort of sense. I think it's really kind of a distraction technique that might be smarter than we give it credit for. And I have seen a lot of distraction around this issue. When Christine is perfectly right, we should be focusing on funding. So should our legislators. But I think, you know, it's very easy for us teachers who are in the classroom all day to only be able to care about a couple of bills and to not be able to focus on, you know, the 50 education bills. So all of the lip service that this has gotten, I think, is a little bit dangerous, where we really need to be applying pressure where it matters.
Instead of playing whack-a-mole. Kind of
I have a little private hope that maybe we could find a way to legislate so that any school receiving public taxpayer dollars, aka STOs and ESA vouchers, would have to abide by the same rules, and that would be a little bit of the camel's nose in the tent for anybody who legislated against espousing religious ideology in taxpayer-funded schools. So
let
maybe
me underscore,
to think about down the line.
Underscore that. Is that, Lily, the a private school that receives state fund is exempt from those kinds of
Oh, it is currently. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, future legislation, it would be fantastic, you know?
So they're exempt. They don't have to follow those rules.
Right.
Correct.
Well, that might get them to think hard before imposing rules on their friends. Mm-hmm. Or themselves.
Yeah, and it was interesting, you know, in the voucher style debate, you know, the ESA debate, there was, I forgot, somebody from a Catholic organization said, you know, vouchers like, you know, this program, the ESA program, have helped our schools, you know, so Catholic schools. And that, you know, I think that raised eyebrows in that committee hearing when he said that, some Catholic school organization.
Why did it raise eyebrows?
You know, just in the sense of okay, so here's this ESA style money that's going to Catholic schools, mm-hmm. and he said without that kind of support, you know, where would we be? We don't know.
It's a source of funding.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
no question. Obviously,
exactly.
if you're running a school, Catholic or otherwise, and somebody's coming in with some money, it helps.
Exactly.
I mean, isn't that the point?
Right.
So. What other things that come to mind in the retaliatory area?
Well, Sylvia Allen's, I think it's 1459, the parental information mm-hmm. bill, that I thought was so detrimental, would have forced teachers basically to know what they're teaching at the beginning of the year, which means that any amount of learning or reading or anything that we do through the course of the year would have had to have been somehow then given to the parents in addition to whatever we gave in the beginning of the year. I mean, things like that.
So forget current events.
Well, forget anything that you learn in the whole nine.
Well,
yeah.
And things, there can be, there are things in the outside environment that could happen today that could be illustrative. Even teach, right? You're
absolutely,
teaching English. And
absolutely.
Something happened yesterday, you bring it into the classroom. It seems to me that's the sort of thing
right,
that gets students engaged.
Right. Just David Brooks recently did a piece about something to the effect of the most valuable thing for a student is to have a relationship with the teacher. It's a really mm-hmm. good piece. And it mm-hmm. was in one of the big,
I don't
know.
A lot of very thoughtful
stuff. Yes. And so that I brought in and we analyzed, you know, we talked about his use of ethos, logos, pathos, talked mm-hmm. about the content as mm-hmm. well. Those kinds of things would be so much more limited with that kind of a proposed bill. But yeah.
Hmm. Okay. What about, so what's the status of the charter bills, the expansion and it sounds like, it sounds to me like from sort of Beth's arithmetic there that there's a greater chance of stopping something bad from happening than there is getting much in a positive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that it looks like there is some support. It's just, you know, I think what we've heard from Christine and Beth and a lot of education leaders is they want more when it comes to charters. Yeah, we covered a story about alternative charter schools just last week. We published it about how those schools in that system you know, are failing a whole league of students. And those bills wouldn't do much in reining alternative charter schools or bringing accountability to those schools. And most alternative schools now are charter schools, and those are meant for at-risk students.
My sense, I just wonder all your reaction, that the private schools and the charter schools in general probably have a wider range of outcomes. There's some of them that seem to be very good. It seems to be much, much wider, and there's a whole bunch of them that are just awful.
Correct. I can't speak to private, but I know charters that's what the research suggests across the country, mm-hmm. that there are really high-performing ones that might perform better than public, but then on the flip side, really low-performing ones that are worse than public, and the vast majority being right in the middle. There's, I think, certainly a broader range.
And I would add as an analyst that the biggest factor, however, in the success of any school is the student body that you attract to it in the first place.
Oh, 100%.
The basis example, which you know, excels by every measure, but you see what they go through, even starting out with a very motivated group of students between the eighth and the ninth grade. They tell them what they're going to have to go through and how many hours they're going to have mm-hmm. to put. And if you're not up to it, we suggest you find another school. Well, if you end up with a population like that, they're going to excel, perhaps partially because of the influence of the school, but very much because of the student population that you're dealing with. This is not unlike any number of other things. For example, you do prison recidivism studies. If you start with a motivated group of prisoners, guess what?
Yeah.
You do very well. So you have people volunteer for a program, and those people do better than other people. Well, you can't disassociate the fact that they volunteered in the first place.
Correct.
That's motivation.
Right.
Students who volunteer to go to a place that's reputed to be very good, or whose parents steer them into a school because it's very good, you have much more motivated parents, probably more motivated students or some combination thereof. You're going to do better because of who's in the classroom.
Right.
If you teach an AP class, the kids are going to do better than the kids in the struggling classes.
Absolutely.
And may or may not be because of the quality of the teaching.
Correct.
Because
totally.
If you're starting...
I'd like to add just to that, I think motivation sometimes stems from, you know, parental involvement. I mean, there are so many factors, but I've always taught in low SES schools, low socioeconomic status, and like the school that I'm currently teaching in is 90% free and reduced lunch. And like sometimes, well, always, we see those motivations can be pretty correlated with poverty levels, because there's so much trauma that's associated with childhood poverty that I think legislators kind of fail to understand, and maybe even like our average citizen fails to understand. Like there's kind of this mentality of like, well, you know, it's the parents' fault, or they're not motivated, so why should they be there? But I mean, that often starts with the low levels of literacy and not having books in the home, and then, you know, being flipped from house to house to house and not ever having like that stability that children in middle incomes, you know, have the luxury of having, and foster situations and abuse situations, right? And those are my students. And so like when I hear the word motivation, I kind of think, you know, not everybody gets to choose their motivation, if that makes sense.
Personal anecdote in that regard. I remember I had a daughter in a high school, and she was mostly in advanced classes and was in one class that wasn't. And it was parent-teacher night. And if you assume, I forget the number, but it's 20 kids in a class. So you go into the advanced classes and it's parent-teacher night. There's 35 parents there for 20 kids. Mm-hmm. Then you go into the regular school, the regular class, and there's three parents there.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Any number of things that could do that. We've run over for this segment. Thank you, Beth. I know you have to go back to class. We appreciate you joining us. And we will conclude with Lily Altavina and Christine Marsh here in the Think Tank in just a moment.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Our thanks to Beth Lewis, who just left us to go back to teach. She is a teacher, and that's her day job. So we appreciate her participation. Christine Marsh, is also a teacher, managed to get out to join us here, a former Senate candidate as well. Lily Altavina is education reporter for the Arizona Republic. Like to ask you, we've talked about what's going on in the legislature. I heard some kind of despondency, the kind of the take that I think you and Beth both had was we're sort of back where we were. We're going to get the promised raise. But of course, that whole activism last year wasn't just about that, though it often got portrayed as that. It was in part about let's at a minimum restore funding to the 07, 08, the levels of 10 years ago. And that wasn't a hard and fast commitment like the 20% over 3 years raise was. The sense is that's not coming. There's some retaliatory measures. There seems to be some backdoor attempts to, despite the initiative, there seems to be some backdoor attempts to try to find some way to continue to bolster charter schools. Is that a fair assessment of your take on the legislative session, both of you?
Yeah.
Well, but I would say there have been a couple of bipartisan measures. You know, I think one of the first bills that the governor signed was some legislation that rolled back the ELL mandate, and mm-hmm. both of those were unanimous votes.
ELL is English language
learner. Yeah. So English language learners, you know, under previous state law, they had to have a four-hour mandatory block of just language instruction, not, you know, reading instruction. Well, I think there would be some reading involved in it, but not math instruction, you know. One school said, one teacher told me she had about 20 minutes of math a day for her ELL students, which was not enough, so much not enough that they had to actually stay after school for math. So the governor actually did sign a bill that rolled back those restrictions.
That one, I think, was sort of a tip of the hat to Kathy Hoffman, who had done in her own master's work, done research on that and found it that it was a very destructive requirement.
Right. And a lot of research on that. So there's it's not entirely bad news, you know, for education advocates and education leaders.
You know what I thought, though? I'm thinking back of that. And I said, you know, OK, this was undoubtedly a good move. But they seem to have a lot of instinct down there to micromanage the classroom. You must do this. You must do that. I wonder if you'd elaborate on that.
Well, I think some of the bad bills that we've already talked about, the retaliatory bills, cover that, you know, everybody thinks that they know everything about education because almost everybody was a student. And so everybody thinks that they have some idea of what goes on in the classroom. And they might from the front side, but they don't from the back side. You have to actually do it. So this micromanaging that's going on that goes on every session where there's attempts to do that is really frustrating. It's really frustrating to teachers, and it certainly does not help with this overall crisis we have of teacher retention.
I think of the English language learner mandate in the first place falling into that. I think I have a sense of where that comes from. We have a population, a chunk of whom comes here not speaking English. And the legislature is aware of that, and they say it's really important to learn English. So we're going to mandate that everybody must have at least 4 hours of English language instruction without talking to anybody about doing it to consider whether, A, that will work, and B, will there be negative consequences of that are worse than the cure?
Absolutely.
And I don't think that instinct is limited to English language issues.
Right.
So we get stuck. The favorite, what was it last year? You must have a flag in every classroom, right?
Yeah.
Which you probably already did anyway.
Constitution.
And without a nickel to pay for it.
Civics test, yeah. All these unfunded mandates, yes.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about that, the funny thing is the legislature constantly complains about unfunded federal mandates.
Yeah, well.
We saw the same. I saw personally the same thing with respect to articulation. That has to do with one educational institution accepting the credits from the others. And years ago, the community colleges were already complaining about the universities. We're not accepting our credit. They're not articulating. They're not accepting our credits. Meanwhile, they were doing the same thing with respect to advanced classes that were performed in a high school.
Mm-hmm.
And right. and they when they're looking up in the educational hierarchy, they had one view of it, but they didn't realize that they were doing the same thing. So talk to me about kind of what's the environment. This all, we sort of got a sense of what it feels like. Does this have the potential of another round of teacher activism? Do you think, is this a powder keg about to explode again? Or what's your sense of?
I think this is a powder keg. I'm not sure. I don't know what teachers are going to do, but I can tell you this, that students in the last one, and it wasn't the fault of anybody, but students got lost in the mix. If teachers do anything, it will be on behalf of students, because everything that happens to us as teachers also happens to our kids.
Anything you think would be a precipitating event? Because I see that and I say people can be generally upset, you know, and one, but it usually takes some event to trigger.
Well, I think we're going to kind of see in the next few weeks how teachers are feeling, you know, because March, which, you know, is going to be any day now, we're going to start the month of March, which is spring break time for teachers. So I think we'll see how many teachers end up at the state capitol. You know, the Arizona Education Association will have some state capitol days for teachers. So we'll see how many, you know, kind of end up on the Capitol lawn, how many sort of plug back in a little bit, you know, when they have some time to check in on legislative issues. So I think that will be when we see teachers gauging support.
Think we'll see crowds down there, Christine?
I'm not a mind reader. I hope we do.
All right. Well, we have a open question, something to look forward to. I'm sure we're not done talking about this. We are for today, however. The clock is the ultimate master around here. We thank you all. Lily Altavina from the Republic, Beth Lewis no longer here, but back in the classroom. Christine Marsh on her way back to school. I would let you know that you can find podcast of this and all of our shows at ktar.com. The older ones at mikeoneal.org. See you next week in the Think Tank.
The morning lights, the streets that lead them, and sirens call them on.